seconds, but can you finally comment on what's happening in Lebanon? The thousands of people killed, the attacks continuing, particularly in southern Lebanon, despite Israel claiming ceasefire talks are progressing.
Yes, well, Israel is failing militarily. It's still stuck on the border zone and is therefore taking out its anger, its aggression on the Lebanese civilian population, and hoping to use that as a form of pressure on the government and on Hezbollah to achieve something.
I want to thank you so much, Muin, for joining us. Muin Rabbani, Dutch-Palestinian Middle East analyst, host of the Connections podcast, former senior analyst for the International Crisis Group, contributor to the book Deluge, Gaza and Israel from Crisis to Cataclysm. Democracy Now! Is currently accepting applications for our video news production and digital fellowships. Go to democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us for another edition of Democracy Now!
This is Judy Berry from Earth First, and when I'm in Portland, I listen to non-commercial community radio, KBOO Portland, no compromise in defense of the truth.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO. In accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Executive Committee meets on the second Thursday of the month at 7 p.m. Meetings are held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify that a meeting is being held.
Welcome to Sojourner Truth. Thank you for staying with us. This is your host, Margaret Prescott. Today, we focus on and get an update on the serial murders of Black women in South Los Angeles. On December 8th, 2022, an event was held featuring Dr. Robin D.G. Kelly and Dr. Terrion Williamson. The event was organized by the Black Coalition Fighting Back Serial Murders to reaffirm that Black women's lives count, to gather support for a permanent community-based memorial for the victims, and for justice for the victims and their families. The event keynote speakers also put the murders within the historic context of the devaluation of Black women's lives and included information about similar pockets of murders that have taken place across the United States. Since the early 1980s, at least 200 Black women and girls were victims of serial murders or mysteriously disappeared in South Los Angeles and presumed to be also victims. Many were victims of the multiple serial murders, including the notorious Grim Sleeper, who preyed on vulnerable and impoverished Black women, sex workers, homeless women, and those who fell prey to the opioid epidemic. Despite media hype, not all of the victims fit these descriptions. Some of you may be familiar with the documentary film Tales of the Grim Sleeper by award-winning filmmaker Nick Broomfield. However, most media outlets paid little or no attention to these murders, taking their cue, it seems, from law enforcement, which shockingly and horrendously labeled the victims as NHI, no human involved. Most city and county officials made little attempt to raise the alarm. All of this resulted in more women continuing to be killed. All this compelled me to found, in the mid-1980s, the Black Coalition Fighting Back Serial Murders. Those of us, all community-based folks in the Black Coalition and our supporters, worked to raise awareness of the murders and to press for justice for the victims and their families. The Black Coalition, as part of its efforts today for a permanent memorial for the victims, are asking for support from both the city and county for the memorial, as well as the general public. We live in a global world. We're all interrelated. So on Sojourner Truth, we work to bring directly to you news and views on local, national, and international policies and stories that affect us all. And we draw out how those of us most impacted, women, communities of color, and other communities are responding. We also discuss the interrelationship between art and politics. Now for our news headlines.
For Pacifica Radio, I'm Christina Onnested. The U.S. Justice Department has found Louisville police engaged in discrimination and a pattern of violating constitutional rights. The probe was launched after the fatal shooting of Breonna Taylor. Attorney General Merrick Garland announced the findings Wednesday.
Some officers have demonstrated disrespect for the people they are sworn to protect. Some have videotaped themselves throwing drinks at pedestrians from their cars, insulted people with disabilities, and called black people monkeys, animal, and boy. The department has concluded that there is reasonable cause to believe that Louisville Metro and LMPD engaged in a pattern or practice of conduct that violates the First and Fourth Amendments of the Constitution. There is also reasonable cause to believe that they engage in conduct that violates Title VI of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, the Safe Streets Act, and the Americans with Disabilities Act.
Garland called it heartbreaking and said the people of Louisville deserve better. NAACP President and CEO Derek Johnson applauded the findings, but said federal lawmakers have yet to step up and enact wider police reforms. The city will now sign a negotiated agreement with the Justice Department, and a federal officer will monitor the police department's progress in meeting reforms. A nationwide day of resistance in Israel blocked roads and shortened U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin's visit to the country today. People in Israel have been protesting the right-wing government's proposal to consolidate power from the Supreme Court for weeks, just as Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is being prosecuted for fraud. Savion Orr is an Israeli protester in Tel Aviv.
I'm here this morning protesting for democracy. Israel is on the verge of becoming an autocratic country. The current government is trying to destroy our democracy and actually destroy the country.
Due to protesters, Austin will meet Israeli officials at a factory near the international airport. Organizers report upwards of 200,000 Israelis have taken to the streets in recent weeks. Meanwhile, in Palestine, security forces fired tear gas canisters and flash grenades at Palestinian protesters during a funeral for a militant in the occupied West Bank who was killed by Israeli forces this week. Israeli forces said the Hamas militant was wanted for the death of two Israelis in the town of Hawara last month. Recent months have been marked by escalating bloodshed across the West Bank, sparked by increased Israeli settlements on Palestinian lands that are illegal under international law. The chief executive of Norfolk Southern, one of the nation's largest railroads, faces a grilling before lawmakers in the Senate Environment Committee today. In prepared remarks, CEO Alan Shaw will issue an apology and a commitment to send millions of dollars to East Palestine on the Ohio-Pennsylvania border, where a train line carrying toxic chemicals derailed and the company then burned. Senators are expected to scrutinize railway safety, the response to the crash, and consider imposing new safety rules. Shaw is committing $20 million to the response and voluntary safety upgrades, but a bipartisan group of senators want to impose new regulations on railroads. The EPA will also testify. It's now ordered testing for dioxin levels in East Palestine, a cancer-causing toxin. Russia launched a massive barrage of missiles and drones that hit residential buildings, critical infrastructure across Ukraine, and killed six people, leaving hundreds of thousands without heat or electricity. In the U.S., a day after the CEO of Starbucks agreed to testify in committee, independent Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders held a hearing on union rights and corporate union busting. Christopher Martinez reports.
Senator Bernie Sanders of Vermont described his committee hearing as being about how to protect workers standing up to corporate greed.
So we got to struggle. There's a class war going on, whether we want to recognize it or not. People on top have the money, they have the power, they are spending hundreds of millions of dollars to try to prevent ordinary workers from coming together to fight for dignity.
Sanders is backing legislation called the PRO Act that would increase protections for union organizing campaigns and boost penalties for violations of workers' rights. The ranking Republican on the committee, Bill Cassidy of Louisiana, says that would force workers in Louisiana and 27 other so-called right-to-work states to join a union.
These efforts are not about supporting the rights of workers. Their intent is to force workers into unions to prop up and support big, politically connected unions.
The PRO Act that Sanders is backing has been picking up support, and it's a struggle that unions are committed to, according to SEIU's Mary Kay Henry.
History shows that sometimes the only way to rewrite the rules is through great disruption, militancy, and strikes. We will not stop fighting until we win.
Reporting for Pacifica Radio News KPFA, I'm Christopher Martinez.
California Governor Gavin Newsom has withdrawn a $54 million contract with Walgreens after the pharmacy giant indicated it would not sell an abortion pill by mail to states that had threatened it with legal action. Newsom ordered state officials to not renew a contract with Walgreens to purchase specialty pharmacy prescription drugs for California's prison healthcare system. It expires April 30th. Newsom said in a statement, California will not stand by as corporations cave to extremists and cut off critical access to reproductive care and freedom. He said the state will leverage its market power to defend the right to choose. I'm Christina Onnestad, reporting for Pacifica Radio.
Those were our news headlines. We now bring you excerpts from the recent event held on December 8th, 2022, Black Women's Lives Count, Reclaiming Our Sisters Everywhere. The keynote speaker of the event included Dr. Robin D.G. Kelly, author and historian. Co-sponsors included A New Way of Life, Alexandria House, Los Angeles, the Association of Black Women Physicians, Black Alliance for Just Immigration, known as BAJI, Black Women Radicals, Center for the Study of Racism, Social Justice, and Health, UCLA Fielding School of Health, Dr. Cosette Lyons-Jones, Elliot Gould, actor, the Global Women's Strike, the Haiti Action Committee, Healthy African American Families, the Los Angeles Community Action Network, LA CAN, Malcolm X Grassroots Movement, New African Womanist Caucus, filmmaker Nick Broomfield, Papillion Art, Susan Burton, the Charles R. Drew University Black Maternal Health Center of Excellence, U.S. Prostitutes Collective, Women of Color, Global Women's Strike, and the Women's March Foundation, Los Angeles. Let us go now to Black Women's Lives Count, Reclaiming Our Sisters Everywhere.
Good afternoon, everyone. I am Ohlone Mission Indian and Chicana. My tribe is the Costeño Rumsen Carmel Tribe, Rodriguez Clan. My grandmother is Virginia Antonio Rodriguez Lopez, and my mother is Rita Rodriguez Lopez. We are the direct descendants of Maria Josefa Mojica de la Rosa, who was born into the California mission system before settling in Duarte, California on Tongva land. Our ancestral homelands are the Monterey Bay area, Berkeley, up through San Francisco area. And again, my name is Sylvia Gonzalez Youngblood. I am honored today to be delivering the virtual land acknowledgement, but I do also want to kind of signify the importance of the land acknowledgement and why we do land acknowledgements here in California and remembering the Tongva ancestors here in San Gabriel Valley. It's to combat the continued genocide and erasure of Native American peoples here in California and across the U.S. and the continent, so through loss of land, language, history, and culture. So today I'll be giving a land acknowledgement that was created by Julia Bogney, a Tongva elder who has since passed on to the spirit world. It was created in collaboration with Julia and Indigenous Circles of Wellness. And the land acknowledgement is that we acknowledge and thank our Tongva, Tatavian, and Chumash relation on whose ancestral lands we reside, gather, and pray. We honor all of the ancestors and their descendants here today and the contributions of all our relatives, past, present, and future. Thank you today, and thank you for allowing me to give this land acknowledgement.
And thank you so much, Sylvia Gonzalez Youngblood. It is right that we open this webinar with an acknowledgement that we are on occupied Indigenous lands. Thank you so very much for joining us. My name is Margaret Prescott, and I'm the founder of the Black Coalition Fighting Back Serial Murders. And I want to welcome all of you to Black Women's Lives Count, reclaiming our sisters everywhere. We are still continuing to get the word out about the murdered women in South Los Angeles. And also, we are planning a permanent memorial for the victims. We also want to acknowledge any family members who have lost loved ones in these horrific murders. We want to acknowledge their presence. To give you a sense of the program, you're going to be hearing some clips. We have amazing keynote speakers. Dr. Robin D.G. Kelly, many of you know of him, of course, with UCLA, very well-known author and historian. You also will hear a brief bit about the Black Coalition Fighting Back Serial Murders and about the Rose South LA Memorial Project. It's a heavy topic, we know, and you could see in the background I've tried to show some of the faces of the victims. But before I go to introduce the clips, we heard the land acknowledgement from the Indigenous people, and I would also like to use this time to call in the ancestors, call in those African ancestors who made the way, the path, for all of us to be here today. And we request their presence and their help in making this webinar a success and for what we are trying to do to lift up these victims for us to remain on the right path. I also want to lift up the spirits of the victims who died in such a brutal and horrific way. You know, I feel their presence. I've been doing this since I founded the coalition in the mid-1980s, and I often feel their presence, and I think that they likely are with us today. So we want to lift them up and acknowledge them. And we also want to, as I said, acknowledge any family members. We know that the grief just doesn't go away. So because the topic is heavy, we do have a lot of information for you. We are also going to pause at some point in the program for a very brief meditative session so that you could think a bit about what you have heard, and then we will continue with our program. So without any further ado, I would now like to introduce two clips. And these clips are from the film, Nick Broomfield's film, Tales of the Grim Sleeper. It was shortlisted for an Academy Award. It has been on HBO. And you're going to hear the first clip of Nana Jumphy, who is a member of the Black Coalition Fighting Back Serial Murders. And then you will hear from one of the survivors. And Nana and the survivor will set the tone for the rest of the program. Let's go to those clips now.
You've allowed Black women to walk around here when someone is hunting them, not knowing that they're being hunted. Imagine if they would have treated victim number three as if she was a student over at UCLA with blonde hair and blue eyes. How many other people might still be living? But the lack of concern allowed for this hunting ground to just be free and open for this person, you know? And that is, for me, the real, real, real tragedy. You know, the real tragedy is just the lack of concern allowed so many more people to be murdered.
Do you think also that people were afraid to come forward and say something?
That's very, very plausible. I mean, the relationship, it's the relationship with the police and the community is such that no one wants to be the person who's giving the police information. You just don't. I tell my own son, you know, he's 16 years old. If something terrible happens and your mother's not home, here are the numbers of people to call. Whatever you do, do not call 911. No, literally, for what? So you can come answer the door, they can blow you away. Don't call 911. You know, or while you're trying to tell them what happened to you, they're trying to find out, you know, do you use drugs every once in a while? You know, are you a part of this gang? They're trying to fill out their little field identification card when you're trying to explain to them that someone has done something, you know? You cannot just, as a Black person, walk into an LAPD station or LASD station and just say, I have something to report, and start describing something and think that you're going to, you know, be treated with dignity, treated with kindness, treated with concern, and be able to leave feeling good, you know, warm, cockles of heart. Yes, I've done something. It is a 99% chance that this is going to be an unpleasant situation for you.
We're now queuing up the second clip, which is a survivor of one of the serial killers. There were actually a series of them in South Los Angeles.
Yeah, I was out there. That doesn't mean I'm nothing. It doesn't mean I'm nothing. Like I'm a piece of trash. I was trapped. That's not what I wanted. That's not the life I wanted. What I'm trying to explain to you and say to you is that just because they have Lonnie doesn't mean this is over with. There's another motherfucker out there just as sick as he is. You know what I mean?
Our sisters, they may be gone, but they're not forgotten. It's very hard to see those faces, some mother's daughter, some father's child, to know that they're gone, but we are carrying on with their memory and uplifting them today. I would now like to welcome Janet Dandridge. I have so much love for this young sister. A few years ago, she came to one of our meetings in South Los Angeles, and Janet said, I want to volunteer. I want to work on this. She is a fantastic artist. And the flyer that many of you have seen, you see a figure in a dress. That figure is Janet. And that dress is a cloth that she had especially made with the photos of the victims. And she has continued over the years to be with us. She's now a young mom of a one-year-old boy. And she has been key with helping to pull this webinar together. I'd like to welcome Janet Dandridge, and she will tell you a little bit briefly about the Black Coalition as well as the Memorial Project. Janet, thank you for everything that you do.
Thank you so much, Margaret. I don't even know where I would be actually in understanding and knowing what's going on in South Los Angeles if it hasn't been or wasn't for your work. So I am in deep gratitude to you. So thank you so much, Margaret. I appreciate that lovely introduction. Hello, everyone. I am going to share some information, as Margaret said, about the Black Coalition Fighting Back Serial Murders and about Rose, South LA, Reclaiming Our Sisters Everywhere, Los Angeles, the actual permanent memorial. So bear with me while I read some information. Following the police announcement that 11 women were victims of a serial killer in South Los Angeles in the mid-1980s, Margaret Prescott founded the Black Coalition Fighting Back Serial Murders, BC, a coalition formed to bring public awareness to the murders, to press the police and city officials to prioritize the murders, to ensure that the media did not trivialize and malign the victims, to bring attention to the neglect of South Los Angeles and similar communities, and to highlight the general lack of resources in the impacted communities. Since its founding, the coalition has held press conferences, vigils, and other protests, and supports families of victims they have worked with. The Black Coalition Fighting Back Serial Murders continues to press for justice, accountability, just victims, compensation for families, and for the lives of all Black women to count. For the lives of all Black women to count. Rose, reclaiming our sisters everywhere. To date, it is estimated that over 200 women and girls are victims of serial murders or have mysteriously disappeared. The South Los Angeles community has been traumatized by the violent loss of so many precious lives over such a protracted period. This loss and trauma must be acknowledged. We refuse to accept the silence and indifference that often follows these murders. We say the names of these Black women and girls who are victims of serial murderers in South Los Angeles and etch them in stone. Each victim is a mother's child, a father's daughter, a sibling's sister, a friend. The victims deserve a permanent memorial that reclaims their dignity, shows community care, and provides the family members and the community a dignified space for reflection and healing. The victims are gone, but they will never be forgotten. There is no official commemoration of these devastating events. A monument is a public statement of worth. It restores dignity to the victims, validates their humanity, and the humanity of their surviving families alike. It declares undeniably that these Black lives mattered. Rose, South Los Angeles is that public statement, reclaiming our sisters everywhere.
Thank you so much, Janet, and thank you for all of your work. I want to acknowledge that the mother of Barbara Ware, we lost Barbara in 1987. Diana Ware is with us. Diana, we know that Barbara is with us as we go through this and we walk this path together. And we want to thank you for your strength and everything that you have brought to this struggle. Laverne, Janisha's mom, Janisha Peters, we lost her in 2007. I would now like to welcome Dr. Chandra Ford again, another person without whom none of this would happen. Chandra, maybe you could just share a little bit about yourself and how you came to this struggle briefly, because I know you're going to be introducing one of our keynote speakers, Dr. Chandra Ford.
Thank you, Margaret. And first of all, I just want to thank you for your dedication. It's difficult to do this work, and you have been at it for a long time, often by yourself or pulling in people as they were willing and able along the way. And we wouldn't be here today were it not for that continued struggle. So thank you. I am Chandra Ford. I also am a faculty person at the UCLA Fielding School of Public Health, where I had the privilege of launching the Center for the Study of Racism, Social Justice, and Health. To me, we cannot consider the serial murders of Black women anything short of a public health issue, in the sense that this is something that plagues our communities and ought to be viewed as a challenge that the public health community has a responsibility to address.
Greetings, everyone. And it is indeed a pleasure to be here to honor the lives of these women who was taken from us, from their families, from their communities, in the way that they were taken. So right now, what we want to do, we want to connect to what we feel inside in regards to these women and their lives. So I'm going to ask everyone to just get very comfortable. Take a moment, close your eyes, and take a deep breath in. Inhale and exhale. Inhale again and exhale. And I'm going to ask you to continue to inhale and exhale, feeling the energy flowing through you and out of you. As you continue to inhale and exhale. Think about the names of the women that you have heard today. Think about the families that you have heard from. Think about the community members. And as you think about everything, what do you feel? What do you feel inside of your body? What emotions come up? Name those emotions within you the same way that the names of our sisters whose lives were taken were named today. You may feel anger, maybe hurt, maybe a little despair. You may feel justice. You may even feel revenge. Whatever it is you feel, acknowledge it and name it. And as you continue to inhale and exhale, connecting with your emotions, what part of your body do you feel? What part of your body is responding to these emotions? Pinpoint that area inside of you. Now breathe into it. Inhale and exhale. And as you feel these areas of your body that are responding to these emotions, begin to breathe in light and healing, love and compassion, empathy for what you feel in your body at this moment is your connection to these women and their experiences. Being part of the living, part of our work is to help our ancestors to move on. And these sisters are now our ancestors. So we help them on the other side as we breathe in love, compassion, justice, appreciation, celebration of their lives, and honor for what they came to this earth to do and what they represented. Take a moment to feel the energy that's been generated inside of you. Take a moment to allow this energy to fill every part of your being, for we are all one. And now send this love, this light, this energy of healing to the spirits of these women. Just send it out into the universe. They'll receive it. They're receiving everything that's being generated from all of the speakers here today. And then send that energy to their loved ones. Touch their hearts. Send it from your heart to theirs. And as we leave this space and continue on learning more about this history in our community, carry within you the energy of these women. See them healed and renewed in the spirit form that they're in now. And carry love in your heart and compassion for their family members. Take a deep breath in, release. Last breath in, inhale, and exhale. Move forward knowing that you are a vessel of healing. You are a vessel of change. Ashe.
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 Ashe. Thank you so much, Renika Adachi. We really needed that. We appreciate you joining us. And Janet, thank you for hooking this up.
I want to thank Mick Broomfield for the film. I also want to thank, importantly, the family members for allowing us to share your story and continuing to walk, even when it's very difficult and painful to walk in this journey and in this pain in many ways. And we're hoping that we can get to a place of reclaiming something of the dignity that your loved ones deserve. And with that, I'm actually going to announce that we'll transition now to the mourning song for victims and their loved ones.
Yeah, and thank you for that, Chandra, to say the language in this song is Dida from out of the Ivory Coast. It's called Lubu, and this is mourning for all of those that we have lost.
You're listening to Sojourner Truth with host Margaret Prescott.
This is Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth. And if you're on Facebook, you can look for us and like us there. We're also on SoundCloud. Just look for Sojourner Truth with Margaret Prescott. And we're going to give a shout out to our SoundCloud listeners across Los Angeles County. And internationally, we're going to give a shout out to our SoundCloud listeners in London, England. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram. Our handle is at SoTrueRadio. We now turn our attention back to Black Women's Lives Count, Reclaiming Our Sisters Everywhere. Just so you know what's coming up, Dr. Kelly is going to be joining us. And I would like now to introduce the man who will welcome Dr. Kelly, Michael Massenburg, who is part of the Black Coalition Fighting Back Serial Murders. You could look him up. He's an amazing artist, and you could see his work. We were really fortunate in our work and in our core to have a few artists to join us and be part of us. And I think, Michael, I can't remember, but I think it was at a screening of Nick Broomfield's film, Tales of the Grim Sleeper, in the Pan-African Film Festival, that you came up and you said, I live in the neighborhood, I'm impacted by this, and I want to help. And you have been with us ever since. Michael Massenburg, we appreciate you. Thank you.
Thank you. It was an honor and pleasure to work with all of you, because this has been a long journey, and I'm the newest one, one of the newest ones involved, but whatever I can do, I'm here. So thank you very much. I'm going to introduce you to one of our distinguished speakers today. Dr. Robin D. G. Kelly is a distinguished professor and a Gary B. Nash Endowed Chair of U.S. History at UCLA. He received his education at a bachelor's of arts degrees from Cal State University, Long Beach. He received his master's and doctorate at UCLA. Early in his academic career, right around 2009, 2010, Dr. Kelly served as a chair for the Howard Yangen Hollingsworth Professor of American History at Oxford University. He was one of the first African-Americans to do so. Along with his teachings, residencies, and fellowship, in 2014, he was also awarded a Distinguished Guggenheim Fellowship. Dr. Kelly is also a prolific essayist, has been published articles in scholarly journals and anthologies and with the popular press, including The Village Voice, Boston Review, and New York Times. Dr. Kelly has published numerous books focused on African-American history, culture, and race relations. He is the author of the definitive biography of The Illness Monk, which received the Penn Open Book Award. His other important books include Race Rebels, Culture, Politics, and the Black Working Class. And also, Your Mama's Dysfunctional, Fighting Culture or Wars in Urban America. Among his current projects for 2023, Dr. Kelly's next published book will be Black Bodies Swinging, an American Postmodern, which examines the political economy of premature death and the struggles to preserve Black life. It is now, I present you with Dr. Robin D.G. Kelly.
Thank you, Michael. The only thing that matters for me is that I know Margaret. All the other stuff is just useless information. But I really appreciate that. So let me just jump in and first with thank yous, both thank you for that really kind and generous introduction. Thank you, Chandra Ford and the Center for the Study of Racism, Social Justice, and Health for hosting this important event and all the work that you do. Special thanks to my friend and colleague, Terrion Williamson, who actually taught me more than I taught. So I'm like a student of hers, and you should read her book, Scandalize Her Name, and read her essay, In Souls, Why Did They Die?, which is very, very important. And especially thank Margaret Prescott for all the critical work you do. And I'm going to thank you throughout this talk. And I just want to remind people, this is a very, very important project. And as Terrion said, there are just basically no or very few memorials to all the Black women murdered all throughout the country. So we're here to memorialize the Black women murdered here in LA and all Black women, cisgender, queer, non-binary, trans, who were victims of femicide. What happened here happened all across the country, as you learn from Terrion's brilliant presentation in that very moving film. And it's also been happening, you know, for generations. But we're here to commemorate, at least I'm here, to really focus on the struggle, specifically the courageous organizing work of the Black Coalition Fighting Back Serial Murders, founded by Margaret Prescott. And I know that she doesn't like to toot her own horn, but this is what I'm going to do. We only know about these women because of Margaret, who founded the Black Coalition in 1985. Basically, her and family members, you know, I mean, she was out there pretty much by herself with the support of the victims of family members, and over time recruited a handful of really dedicated organizers like the incredible attorney Nana Jumpy. Certainly you heard from Janet Dandridge and Michael Massenburg and others. They fought for decades, mobilizing against the routine killing of Black women who were treated by police and society as a whole as disposable. The LAPD inferred their disposability by using the moniker that they use for most Black people, that is NHI, no humans involved. In these cases, the Black Coalition was relentless. You know, Margaret became a thorn in the side of the LAPD and a public relations nightmare for the city of LA. She exposed the police for inaction and for suppressing evidence. They forced the LAPD to eventually form a task force and the LA City Council to authorize a reward of $35,000 for capture and conviction of the killers. Now, the Black Coalition was not the first or only organization in the country calling attention to serial murders of Black women, as we heard from Terrion, but I want to really spend the next few minutes highlighting what was unique about the Black Coalition, what's unique about their analysis and the analysis that Margaret brought to this work. For one thing, the problem they faced, they understood, went way beyond a single deranged individual. She and the Black Coalition understood that state policies and state violence were behind the deaths of these women by making them vulnerable to femicide, to premature death. Margaret knew that poverty, precarity, gendered violence, the erosion of the social safety net, whatever's left of it, and the fact that so many Black families lose members to the criminal justice system left so many Black women and girls vulnerable to things like sex trafficking, physical and sexual abuse, and homelessness. Black girls make up more than 40% of the US domestic trafficking victims, and yet police routinely classify missing Black girls as runaways rather than as abductees. They're not, you know, they're being abducted. presuming that Black victims of sex trafficking are willing participants, which then makes them subject to prosecution and thus unworthy of protection. In other words, you know, Margaret Prescott understood what many of us still do not, and that is the deaths of Deborah Jackson, Henrietta Wright, Barbara Ware, Bernita Sparks, and all the others mentioned were as political as the killing of Michael Brown, Trayvon Martin, Eric Garner, Breonna Taylor, and others. We don't see the politics all the time because of the ways in which the victims are devalued. You know, Margaret often tells the story of the police official who asked, you know, why are you so concerned about all this? You know, he's only killing hookers. And, you know, we've heard that before. You see it in the movies. You see it on, you know, special victims units, right? We've heard that refrain many times. The cops characterize the victims as drug addicts, as runaways, and this compels a lot of the activists and the victims' families oftentimes. It puts them in a defensive position, and they feel compelled to defend the reputations of the victims, their innocence, to prove that they deserve justice. But here's the thing. So Margaret and the Black Coalition refused to play along from the very beginning. The truth is, most of the women whose lives Margaret Prescott were interacting with at the time and fought for were in fact sex workers and addicts. But rather than deny it, she insisted that their livelihood and the racialized and gendered web of oppression maintained by the sex industry, the drug economy, the police, and the criminal justice system made them more vulnerable to femicide, but no less valuable, no less valuable. As the co-founder of International Black Women for Wages for Housework and a central figure in the organization of sex workers and welfare mothers, Margaret grasped the gendered economic basis for poor women's vulnerability and defended all reproductive labor as valuable work. That is to say, work deserving dignity, work deserving protection, and work deserving fair compensation, including, of course, sex work. So long before she founded the Black Coalition, she was fighting against the very conditions that rendered all poor and working class Black women subject to premature death. So to understand her revolutionary perspective, we've got to go back a bit. And, you know, most of you know her story, going back to her native Barbados, being an early civil rights activist in New York City. In the 70s, she taught adult literacy in the SEEK program, Search for Education, Elevation, and Knowledge, at Queens College, part of City University of New York. And the program was really unique in that it was designed to help low-income Black and Latinx students succeed, many of whom were, of course, welfare mothers on public assistance. The SEEK program became a hotbed of feminist organizing. It had the teachers included people like June Jordan, Adrienne Rich, Audre Lorde, and then two women who would become really important comrades, Ndaye, a revolutionary organizer and intellectual who would return to her native Guyana and help found the Working People's Alliance. She recently passed away a couple of years ago. And Wilmot Brown, a former Black Panther from Newark, who ended up in England. The three of them were drawn to the writings of Selma James, founder of Wages for Housework Movement, and having worked with welfare mothers and poor Black women, reading Selma James reinforced her critique of liberal feminism and helped them see how demanding money from the state rather than competing with men for a career was critical for advancing women's liberation. And so therefore you see Margaret, you know, organizing sex workers first as part of Coyote and then as a founder of the US Prostitutes Collective. They, you know, argued that the criminalization of sex workers kept them in a state of precarity and dependency because sex workers had no right to legal protection. So the idea was to abolish the laws criminalizing them. This was especially the case for Black women who faced a higher chance of arrests and violence than white sex workers, and were subject to a state authority that would declare them unfit mothers and place the children into foster care. So even before like the whole divest, invest movement was all the rage among abolitionists, the Prostitutes Collective was arguing that state funds used to police sex work and basically divide families could actually be used for housing, childcare, social services, and to create safe houses for those who are runaway minors. So my point is, Margaret Prescott never hid or evaded the fact that the victims, many of whom were in fact compelled into sex work. And in her view, and that of the Black community at large, how these women earned a living was actually irrelevant because many of the victims were mothers. The Black Coalition did some things that we don't always talk about, like they set up mutual aid networks to provide food, clothing, and financial assistance to the families of the victims. They provided counseling for the children who were left behind, really thinking about what were the consequences of these murders for the families and for the whole community. And still, while they're doing all this work, the body count kept rising. And at every press conference, you could see, Margaret Prescott, out there challenging Police Chief Daryl Gates to explain why the LAPD withheld information from the public for nearly 2 years, why they didn't make an arrest, why they had a different response to some of the other serial murders that affected white women, like the Hillside Strangler, the Ninth Stalker, all that stuff. And yet, she knew all along, the Black Coalition knew all along, that the police were never capable of stopping the murders and delivering justice. They consistently pointed out that the LAPD's slow and meager response had to do with the class, the occupation, and the color of the victims. And they even, you know, as a last resort, tried to turn to the mayor, Tom Bradley, to get a federal investigation. But even Tom Bradley was like, no, Gates can handle it. No. Margaret understood that the problem was never a matter of manpower. And this is a really important point I want to drive home as I come to a conclusion here. It was never a matter of manpower because law enforcement in LA County and prison construction throughout the state experienced spectacular growth during this very same period in the 1980s and 90s, fueled by the war on drugs and the state's strategy of prison expansion as one means of jumpstarting California's stalled economy. So between 1984 and 1990, the LAPD force, and I'm not even talking about the county sheriff because they were also involved, but the LAPD force grew from 6,900 officers to 8,400 officers. And part of the windfall that the police enjoyed had to do with the fact that they got all these extra resources due to the 1984 Olympic Games. Again, this is all simultaneous with the murders of these women. And of course, what did the LAPD do? They deployed those resources to escalate its war on Black and Brown youth, ostensibly the war on gangs, which was sold to the public as a war on drugs, even though the targeted gangs only accounted for about a quarter of the drug trade. It didn't matter because by the mid-1980s, LA and the nation more broadly witnessed a dramatic increase in crack cocaine use. These women, the women we're talking about, the women we're moralizing, were the casualties of war. The war on drugs heightened police harassment of sex workers in South Los Angeles, especially as crack cocaine reshaped the economy and the sex economy. Many, if not most of the victims were trading sex for crack or working the streets to earn money to secure drugs. You know, and again, I'm not saying all, because again, like as Terrian pointed out, the scope is enormous in terms of children and elders being victims of violence and of femicide. But in terms of this core, it's important to put it in the context of the war on drugs. Their relative isolation as poor Black women, you know, often having to deal with the drug economy, expose them to violence from clients, from pimps, from dealers, from cops, from predators. And nearly all male they all controlled every aspect of the underground economy. And women were, of course, denied and still are denied an equal share of the revenues. So it keeps them dependent on men and subject to exposure, since women and girls are on the front lines of where the sexual and drug economies meet. These women were harassed, are harassed, shaken down, and especially vulnerable to what? To rape and murder. So this very web of oppression is precisely what the abolition of all laws pertaining to sex work promised to end. So the bottom line here is that there is a relationship between the struggle for autonomy of sex workers and state violence, the expansion of the police power, and the abolition of those kinds of laws, and the abolition of the carceral state. You know, so meanwhile, in the shadow of police power, Black women continue to be killed. Margaret Prescott went on to be the principal coordinator of the Global Women's Strike in 2000, which mobilized under the slogan, "Invest in Caring, Not Killing." The strike clearly reflected an older tradition of women's peace movements, and the call to invest in caring, not killing, is really an unambiguous appeal to anti-militarism. But that's not all. We can read the slogan as an abolitionist demand to put forward or put forward by the combatants of this domestic war, right? In many ways, this memorial is an anti-war memorial. I hope we could think about it this way. It recognizes and mourns the loss of so many Black women, and at the same time reminds us that the war is hardly over and the police cannot win this war. On the contrary, policing and the criminal justice system perpetuate this war. The Black Coalition Fighting Back Serial Murders is the model of the kind of anti-war movement that we need, and our survival depends on it. Thank you.
Well, Dr. Kelly, Robin Kelly, thank you so very much. So well put. Casualties of War, an anti-war memorial. Thank you, Robin. You know, we hadn't really thought of it in that way, but when you uttered those words, it made perfect sense. Thank you for all of your support and everything that you do, Dr. Robin Kelly, including supporting those student workers that are now on strike in the UC system. Thank you for that as well.
Thank you.
And Robin, you mentioned my name quite a bit. You know, none of us can do this alone. I'm glad you mentioned the strike and Selma James and Nina Lopez over in London, Rachel West, who's on this call right now with U.S. Prostitutes Collective. They were some early, early supporters of this work of the Black Coalition. And I ran across a statement from Us Pros from the early days. I do also want to lift up Bobby Hodges Betts, who's one of the early members of the Black Coalition Fighting Back Serial Murders in the mid-1980s. She's having some health challenges, so we want to hold her in our hearts and lift her up. Laverne Butler Scriven and Alma Stent, there were so many stood with me, and the women in Los Angeles who were part of the Global Women's Strike, Sydney Ross Risden, who is actually on this call, the late Ruth Tedasco and others. We wouldn't have been able to do it without our sisters standing with us. Any last quick send-off, Chandra?
We are all connected, and may we continue to see ourselves as connected in the struggle.
We're out of time. Today's show produced by me, that's Margaret Prescott. I'd like to thank the Sojourner Truth team, our assistant producer, Alicia Vargas, who did the editing for today's show. And I'd like to thank our board operator, Gary Baca. I'd also like to thank the Black Coalition Fighting Back Serial Murders for allowing us to share this discussion with you. For those of you who would like to support the Black Coalition and or the Victims Memorial Project, just go to www.rosesouthla.org. That's www.rosesouthla.org. If you'd like a copy of today's show, contact the Pacifica Radio Archives at 1-800-735-0230 or go online to pacificaradioarchives.org. Thank you so much for listening. You all stay well and safe. This is your host, Margaret Prescott.
KBOO radio station is located in Portland, Oregon, in Multnomah County. We honor the indigenous people whose traditional and ancestral homelands we stand on, the Multnomah, Kathlamet, Clackamas, Tumwater, Watlala bands of the Chinook, the Tualatin, Kalapuya, and many other indigenous nations of the Willamette and Columbia River regions. It is important to acknowledge the ancestors of this land and to recognize that we are here because of the sacrifices forced upon them. In remembering these communities, we honor their legacy, their lives, and their descendants with the forming of relationship to each other and the living world. We establish and support harmony within ourselves and set the stage for progress.
Oh, I wish there's a mole in the ground.